Michelle, as we meet, I think it's important to remind the honorable members that as a committee, we now have someone who's acting in the position of the secretary, who has taken a leave of maternity, and therefore there's this feeling that appears that it's difficult. Now the problem sometimes when you say Mandela, then you'll be told now it's Mandela. So we will wait for the language. Honorable members, as we meet today, obviously, we are going to be dealing with one serious matter, which is the issue of the mining charter. Are there any apologies?
Good morning, members. We've got an apology from Ms. Nyambi and an apology from Ms. Mafolo. And I just received this morning that an apology from the Minister as well.
Okay. There are two issues that one that we have today on the agenda, which will be the briefing by the department on the processes on the review of the mining charter, and then we'll be dealing with the minutes. Is there any other matter? I wanted to suggest, honorable members, because last week we dealt with the issue of the letter that was referred to the minister, that can we deal with the issue as we deal with the minutes, and then under matters arising, which will be amongst other issues, as reflected in the minutes. Is that agreed? Any mover?
Thank you very much. I first and foremost wish to adopt the agenda as it is, to move that we accept the agenda as it is. Secondly, I wish to also to second that we deal with that letter in the matter arising before it comes.
I second the motion, Chair.
Okay, on that note, Babumzi, we are at your mercy in terms of the presentation.
Sibongi, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, TMR colleagues that are with me today, invited guests, ladies and gentlemen, members of the media. I would like to once again greet you and say good morning. I think for us as a department, we continue to be greatly honored, honorable members, to address you on our program. I think it's very important that we continue to do that, and we really value the guidance that you provide on the programs and the work that we do as a department. Also, honourable members, we are very pleased that we are meeting today when the mining sector is experiencing an upsurge in mining production, mainly with our key minerals, including PGM, coal, and iron. I think for us it's encouraging, given the challenges that we had, as you honourable members will know. Since last year, there were announcements on retrenchments. However, we are really pleased that it appears we are pulling out of that era, mainly as a result of the much needed increase in the commodity price. We'll continue to work together with the sector on the issues that will ultimately assist us in achieving the government imperatives, including the National Development Plan and improving employability for our people in the respective areas. Today we are presenting the reduced mining charter. I must also emphasize that the charter, as honourable members will know, was introduced to effect transformation within the sector. That's in support of the MPRPA. And there has been experience or learnings that we had in the last 14 years since its existence. And now we've gazetted the review charter in April this year. We've received substantial inputs from stakeholders. We've received about 60 inputs from stakeholders. We'll talk to it when we go through the presentation itself. And we didn't only receive the inputs, but we've engaged with each and every stakeholder so that we must there must be an understanding where we are coming from and also where they are coming from. I think it's important that we are raising this. Firstly, we are still continuing engaging. I think it's important for us to emphasize the fact that it's still in work in progress. We are foreseeing that we might be finished by the end of December. We are currently consulting with communities, but it's important that we also communicate with communities and traditional leaders on this particular matter. So there is that work that is happening. Without any further ado, honourable members, I'll request my colleagues to take the honourable members through the presentation itself. Mr. Mabuza will take us through the presentation. Thank you.
thank you, DG. Honourable Chair, honourable members, good morning. Today we'll take you through a bit of introduction on the charter, objects of the charter, a bit of background, talk about the alignment of the charter with the BBBEE Act and the generic code, and go through the proposals contained in the charter, as well as the establishment of an agency, and then we'll conclude. members, I think the first point, honourable members, to highlight is that the charter is in the law. It is provided for in section 102, subsection A of the MPRDA to facilitate transformation. And it is this section that empowers the minister to develop a charter with timeframes and targets to ensure that he can achieve the envisaged transformation as embedded in the law. Inherent in the empowerment to develop is a concept of amendment. And so from time to time, it is a legally acceptable empowerment of the executive authority that you have given the powers to develop. That with development is the notion of amendment and review to ensure that the instrument that is used remains current and relevant. Big DG has indicated the introduction of the charter in 2002. We assessed in 2009 as well as 2015 and published the assessment of progress that we have made in both instances. And our observation is that although there had been a noticeable improvement in effecting transformation of the industry, we, however, still have some way to go, and using the benefit of hindsight of implementing this instrument over the past 14 years, we are in a much better position today to strengthen it and streamline it and make sure that indeed transformation and growth of the industry are achieved. So the in terms of the objects of the charter, it seeks to achieve the following. Firstly, it recognizes the internationally accepted right of the state to exercise sovereignty over both mineral and petroleum resources development within the Republic. One of the key focus areas is de-racialization of the ownership of the industry in addressing the past imbalances and injustices. It seeks to substantially and meaningfully expand opportunities for black persons in particular to enter the industry and to benefit from the development of these resources. It seeks to utilize existing skills and expand from this base for the empowerment of the previously marginalized South Africans. It advances employment and diversification of the workforce in order to achieve the required competitiveness of the industry as well as productivity. Our argument is that in the South African context, productivity cannot be achieved unless diversification of the workplace is attained. It seeks to enhance the social and economic welfare of mine communities as well as major labor sending areas in order to achieve social cohesion. It promotes sustainable development and growth of the industry. It seeks to be a catalyst for growth and development of local mining inputs. We will expand on that and other objects, as well as promoting beneficiation of South Africa's minerals. The reviewed charter was gazetted on the 15th of April this year for public comment for a period of 60 days. We received 60 substantive written submissions, on average one a day. All these submissions were considered, and you would notice that what we are presenting to you today is materially different from what we published at the time as a result of our due consideration of the submissions that we had received. Not only did we limit the consultation process to submission of written representation, but we invited stakeholders to make physical representations, and all came through and some came more than once to engage with us on this important subject of transformation. So just taking you through a range of stakeholders we have consulted. We met and engaged with organized business, that is the Chamber of Mines, as well as SAMDA, representing the junior miners. The individual mining companies made representations. Organized labor in the form of the National Union of Mine Workers, AMCU, Solidarity and UASA, and various legal members of the legal fraternity, the non-profit and community-based organizations, various public interest groupings. We had research institutions, including universities, financial institutions, youth formations, system developers, capital equipment suppliers, consulting firms, trade association, as well as within government. And so, as indicated earlier, we've taken all of those inputs, we have engaged robustly with the stakeholders on the subject, and we're at the phase now where we have taken the charter to communities and traditional leaders. The minister led the engagement with the traditional authority 2 weeks ago to take them through the mining charter and seek their input and their appreciation of the charter and what it seeks to achieve. And that process is going very well, and we are continuing to engage with other communities on the mining charter. It is our intention to publish the charter in December, as indicated earlier. And the reason for that is that one of the key intentions is that as a country we have national custodian of transformation as the BBBEE Act, which came into transformation in 2015. And the Act provides for sector-specific charters to be developed, and mining charter is one of those. And the importance here is that the sector-specific charters must be aligned in terms of definitions, terms, and concepts to enable harmonization of transformation across all economic sectors. For instance, some of the mining companies that are assessed for mining charter compliance have to invite these independent verification companies at a cost to assess their level of compliance with the generic codes of the DTI. So now that introduces a dual process of transformation. So with this alignment, once it's concluded, a mining charter assessment will automatically be linked to the DTI generic codes. So you'd automatically either be at level one or any of the levels of the DTI. And that's part of government streamlining its regulatory instrument. Both the ministers of mineral resources and trade and industry met and agreed that it is undesirable to have these conflicting transformation regulatory regimes. And as indicated, the alignment is in essence relating to the definition of terms as well as concepts. We are not turning the mining charter into the DTI codes. The main thing is that we are ensuring that the definitions and the concepts and the terms utilized are indeed in harmony. And so in terms of the alignment, I think I've touched several times on this object, which is to address any material misalignment on the definition, terms, concepts between the two instruments. In October 2015, the mining charter was exempted for a period of a year from a trumping clause in the BBBEE Act, and our ministers are in conversation to finalize the extension of the exemption granted to the DMR to allow us to finalize this process of consulting, in particular with communities and traditional leaders. So to take you through the elements of the charter that's reviewed, we start with ownership. On ownership, there is a publicly known engagement between the department and the Chamber of Mines to finalize the negotiations intended to settle out of court the impending declarator on the interpretation of the so-called emphasis, so-called once empowered, always empowered. This is in line with the directive of the President of the Republic, His Excellency J.G. Zuma. We shift to procurement. On procurement, honorable members, the changes that have been proposed
the reviewed charter introduces the following. Firstly, the emphasis was on the distinction between capital goods and consumable goods. And in this reviewed charter, goods are collapsed. So goods make reference to both capital goods and consumables. They come from the same budget. The thresholds in 2010, capital goods were at 40% and consumable goods were at 50%. What this reviewed charter introduces is a slight upward adjustment of the threshold to 70% of total procurement budget, exclusive of the non-discretionary expenditure. And we are emphasizing here that this threshold will be on locally manufactured goods. And I want to emphasize here that we are talking here about the industry being a catalyst for economic activity around itself. So those thresholds of 2010 required for goods to be sourced from BEE entities. And our experience has been a BEE entity establishes a firm or an office and buys goods from other destinations. So the industry has bought from a BEE entity and they report accordingly that we have bought from a BEE entity. And so when we engage with them, they say 95% of our procurement budget is spent in South Africa. But we are struggling to see that kind of local manufacturing capacity that is consistent with the reports that procurement is at 95% out of the average of 250 billion rand of a strength of a procurement budget of the industry collectively. And it is for this reason, honorable members, that we're not only emphasizing on locally manufactured goods, but that these locally manufactured goods must be independently validated by such credible entities as the South African Bureau of Standards. On services, we are looking at a minimum of 80%. This is a slight upward adjustment from 70% in the 2010 charter. These must be sourced from BEE compliant companies that are at a minimum of 50% plus one black ownership and control. We remain resolute on the research analysis that the South African-based facilities must be utilized for all samples across the value chain. And our intention is to restore the research capacity that supported the industry that we once endured and enjoyed. The concept of foreign suppliers is refined. It used to be called multinational. And so if a South African company is operating in different nations, it will qualify as a multinational company. And it was not our intention to look at necessarily South African companies. And for that reason, we have better refined this concept to foreign suppliers that are required to contribute, and we are increasing the threshold from 0.5% in 2010 to 1% of the revenue generated from doing business in South Africa. For instance, if they were supplying goods, we still have 30% flexibility of foreign suppliers to do business with our mining industry. And it is important, therefore, that when they are obtaining value from the development of the mineral resources of the country, that they also contribute towards our social development program.
Honorable members, you wouldn't have this slide, but we have put it out so that we can clarify. We have noted after submitting the presentation that the breakdown is not particularly clear in what we had given to you. And so this is how the procurement element is broken down. So we'll look first at goods, that is capital goods and consumable goods. You'll see that the percentage is highlighted, bolded, would add up to 70%. I think honorable members are aware that government is pushing for the expansion of SMME environment, and there is legislation to this effect that moves for 30% set aside in government and outside of government in order to stimulate small business development. Our future, our economic future as a country rests with SMMEs. And it is for this reason that we have taken 30% of the 70%. And so 30% of the 70% works out to 21 percentage points. So that must be sourced from a minimum of 50% plus one black-owned and controlled SMME. This is linked to supplier development principle. Secondly, we are looking at an additional 5 percentage points of the target that must be procured from companies with 50 plus 1% black women owned and controlled, as well as 50% plus one youth owned and controlled. I think honorable members are aware that the women in the country require all the support that we can put in place to create opportunities to empower women and indeed our youth in the country. And it is for this reason that this charter makes provision for this 5 percentage points from the consumable goods. And so the remainder, which is the 44% of the 70% of the target, must be procured from companies that are at least at level 4 BEE plus 26% ownership in terms of the DTI code. And so further clarity is provided in terms of this breakdown on the services. On services, we are looking at a minimum of 10 percentage points that must be procured from 50 plus 1% of black women owned and controlled, an additional 5% that must be procured from companies with a minimum of 50% plus one youth owned and controlled. And so the remainder thereof is from companies that are at least at 50% plus one black ownership and control. Honorable members, moving along to community development, you'll be aware that there are various challenges that are experienced in the country in respect of community development, both in the mining areas that approximate to mines, as well as major labor sending areas. And so for this reason, this reviewed mining charter introduces the notion of streamlining community development in order to maximize the socio development impact from mining. And so this charter places more emphasis on socio-economic development of communities in line with the MPRDA bill proposal that defines communities. As a result, the mine community development aspects of procurement, as well as human resources development elements contained in the charter, expressly make provisions for community benefit from those elements. And the percentage set aside for mine community development has for the first time been prescribed in this charter. We have previously left it to the industry and indicated that a proportionate portion of the business must be reflective of the community development investment. And we had noticed that that is creating uncertainty. And so to deal with this uncertainty, we are prescribing what is required in terms of the contribution to community development. We'll talk to it in this slide. This element is applicable to both communities that are proximal to mines as well as major labor sending areas. And so, honorable members, what we are introducing here is that 1% of revenue generated, not annually, but over intervals of 2.5 years. And so, because the SLP is applicable for 5 years, a company would require to show its annual projections for a period of 2.5 years and another 2.5 years, and out of that, 1% of the two intervals of 2.5 years will then represent the quantum of commitment towards community development in terms of this loan. And so the element further requires that the social and labor plan projects be linked to the IDPs that are finalized in consultation with all relevant stakeholders, inclusive of the traditional authorities. And in the MPRDA bill, we clarify the applicability of social and labor plans for the tenure of the mining right, which is renewable at 5-year intervals and to be approved by the department. And so every 5 years, it would be necessary that an SLP is renewed and its applicability is linked to the duration of the mining right, which is a maximum of 30 years. We also provide for the right holders operating within the same area to collaborate as part of maximizing the development impact, and also where possible for government and the mining right holders to work together in streamlining and ensuring that both of us can achieve the desirable community development objectives that all of us talk about, that we are intent on contributing towards community development. And so the community development projects will include, amongst others, infrastructure projects, could be a water, a dam, poverty eradication projects, enterprise development, and any other income generating projects. We have noted that previously the access to SLPs had been very difficult. And in order for us to achieve the transparency that we are committed to in this charter, we commit to publish social and labor plans in both English and a dominant language in that particular area. And we further clarify the interface between the mining charter as well as the social and labor plan. Honorable members, we move on to the next element, which is human resources development. We had agreed with the industry in 2010 that we will progressively increase the contribution to skills development from that year to 2014 to achieve 5% of payroll at the time, all of payroll, and this is exclusive of the statutory skills development levy of 1%. In this charter, we are aligning to the skills development levy in that we are retaining the 5% necessarily, but it is not of payroll in its entirety, but the leviable amount, in line with the Schedule 4 of the Income Tax Act. And this 5% is for skills development. I think in this industry, you have heard many of our stakeholders talking about shortages of skills. And this is one of the most critical investments that we can make to ensure that we can grow this industry for many, many decades ahead of us. This 5% shall include, amongst others, the support of South African-based academic institutions that are doing mining research, with a particular bias towards what has previously been termed bush universities, research and development initiatives that are intended to develop solutions in exploration, mining, processing, technology efficiency, such as both energy and water use in the mining industry, beneficiation, health and safety, environmental conservation and rehabilitation. We are further introducing that out of that 5%, 2 percentage points of the element must be contributed towards the Mining Transformation and Development Agency. In the published charter, we were making reference to the Ministerial Skills Development Fund. And you'll notice that we have shifted away from the trust fund to the Mining Transformation and Development Agency. We will talk about this agency a little bit later in the presentation. Unemployment equity, honorable members, one of the things that we do, we have done, is to shift from the use of economically active population, and we have replaced that with national and or provincial demographic, and this is in line with the recent Constitutional Court judgment in the Solidarity versus Correctional Services case on the same matter. At the board level, we are introducing that a minimum of 50% black people must have exercisable voting rights, proportionately represented, and of that, 20% must be females, black females in particular. Our understanding, based on the Employment Equity Commission report, is that black women representation at board level across the economy is at best 3% currently. At senior management, we are introducing a minimum of 60% black employees as a proportional representative percentage of all senior management, and of that target, 20% must be black females. At middle management, we are introducing a minimum of 80% of black employees, of which 25% is black female representation. At junior management, a minimum of 88% black representation, 30% of which must be black females. And we also introduce employees with disabilities that we did not have previously, and that 2% of employees with disabilities as a percentage of all employees, and this must be reflective of national and or provincial demographic. Again, the Employment Equity Commission shows that in the mining industry, this 2% is all white males of disabled employees of the industry. And surely, that situation is untenable. For core and critical skills, we introduce a requirement at a minimum threshold of 40% black people represented in the industry's core and critical skills, and we are defining these core and critical skills to include technical representation across all organizational levels. And our intention here, honorable members, based on experience, is that we do not end up with black people appointed only in positions that are not core necessarily to the development of and growth of the business. And I think you can imagine what some of those positions are. Honorable members, when we introduced, when we published the draft on the 15th of April, we had omitted the sustainable development element. Our stakeholders, all of them except one, came very strongly in their representation that as government, it would be a mistake for us to remove this element of sustainable development. They pleaded with us that there had been good traction that had been made since we introduced this sustainable development element in 2010, particularly on the issues of mine health and safety resolution. And it was based on this representation of our stakeholders, because we have a duty to listen to our stakeholders in their majority, not necessarily one stakeholder's voice, that we have taken and reintroduced this notion of sustainable development. And as part of streamlining the charter, in the 2010 charter, we had the research analysis included under sustainable development. We have moved that to procurement, as presented to you earlier, because that is a procurement issue. And we have introduced a requirement for research and development. Honorable members, you may recall that in the up to the mid-1990s, research and development in the mining industry was fantastic. It is today a shadow of what it used to be. We cannot grow this industry unless we make a concerted effort to invest in research and development to ensure that this research and development can find us the kinds of solutions that we require, be it health and safety solutions, be it productivity solutions, be it efficiency and other sorts of technology and otherwise solutions that we require. And it is for this reason that under sustainable development, aptly so, that we introduce this research and development. We have looked at the financial statements of some of the progressive companies in the mining industry that are in the country, and in their financial statements, they reflect on average 0.15% of expenditure towards research and development. The only problem is that in South Africa, that money is not necessarily spent in the country. Linked to this is that as government broadly, a program of research and development led by the Department of Science and Technology and provided for in the income tax has fiscal incentives that encourage research and development, and those who apply to the program can receive 150% rebates from the fiscus. And we really here are working with the industry so that we can achieve the research and development and the growth and sustainability of the industry that we seek to achieve. On housing and living conditions, honorable members, this element we have since omitted since the publication of the charter, and the reason being that it is provided for in section 101 subsection B of the MPRDA. And our view is that it must be made housing, living and working conditions, and that the section 101B must be strengthened in the bill to ensure that it is enforceable and that we can achieve the desired housing, living and working conditions for the mine workers. And that currently this important element is clouded and is conflated with the mining charter element. And so the transitional arrangement pertaining to mine workers living and housing and living conditions are provided for pending the finalization of the standard. And our intention is to ensure that there is no gap between omitting the element and transferring it to the standard. And so those transitional mechanisms are inbuilt in the charter that we are introducing. And so closer to finishing, honorable members, we'll take you through the establishment of the Mining Transformation and Development Agency. It replaces two things, two funds. The first one being the Social Development Fund that was originally created for, in terms of the contribution of foreign companies, suppliers. And secondly, it replaces the Ministerial Skills Development Fund. And the agency will be responsible for, one, skills development in terms of the 2 percentage points we have made reference to, and secondly, enterprise and supplier development. Our view is that the contribution of foreign suppliers should be reinforced necessarily for the enterprise and supplier development initiatives. We have every intention of finalizing the establishment of this agency within 12 months upon publication of the reviewed charter, and we are consulting with our with all the relevant stakeholders on its establishment. In conclusion, honorable members, the alignment of the charter with the BBBEE Act, the DTI Code, and other government regulatory frameworks, in our view, is a necessary step for streamlining and integration of government transformation policies and legislation. And the other government legislation, for instance, is the Employment Equity Act, the Skills Development Levy. We have made reference to the BBBEE Act and the GTI Code and a few others. And the streamlining of community development element seeks to ensure that mine communities as well as major labor sending communities can optimally benefit from mining activities. The review process has been subjected to a thorough consultation process with our relevant stakeholders and affected parties, and we continue to do so in the next couple of days and weeks prior to final publication in December. And that brings us to the end of the presentation, honorable members. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Why are you smiling, Honorable Lauren? Honorable Member, the bells will be rung for 10 minutes.
They want to put out your attention on a little bit of inside. So the consultant committee to assist in giving approval to create an inside collaboration to do it. So it says the form of just say you register for e-filing, but you don't remember your password or your username, and then they'll ask you, they'll say they want to send it to you. After you send it to you, when you get it, send me the SMS and I'll make the decision.
Remove the 2 percentage points of the school development. The problem is 15% of the material
ended.
If you didn't like any requirements. And now they're taking what's normal. It's 2%. What is it? But it's 2%. This is 40%. Or 2 minus out of 5. It's 40% now going to the NCDA. Similarly, that's the supply. It's highly restricted.
The 2% of school development, because they say variable amount, they make it seem so
I'm going to move the loser right now, they need to take the question.
but we don't ask those questions.
person, but now what's happening is that
and this
5% was supposed to go to the Skills Development Fund. To the is this the MSDF? Or the
Code of Conduct meeting.
There was a ministerial development.
The first hand that I had noted has gone out. Any other hand? Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Matlala, Honorable Mandel, Honorable Mkwe. Or Honorable Mkwena, Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Matlala, Honorable Mandela, the next time I'm going to come this way, Shonezan. In between, I will recognize the Honorable Lorima if she comes before Honorable Af. If he. I don't understand why men don't want to be called she. But they are a product of a she. Product. Now I'm sure Honorable Lorima doesn't take any offense of being a she because she understands how important a she is. She, Honorable Mukwena?
I sort of raised my hand last because I was hoping I'd be last. But
don't do that thing, ne? Where I was in one school of thought. So this man, and I won't mention his name because it's a little bit popular these days. He will raise his hand. Someone will raise his hand, and he will say, he raises his hand immediately after that person. So when he's the one that is being pointed to, says, no, I'm waiting for this one to speak so that I can oppose what he's going to say. So I hope that is not the case.
I think that was primarily the philosophy.
Honorable Mukwe. No, you will be the last one if the round comes back again.
No, that's fine. No, that's fine. My main concern is with youth. Given that the youth are the bullseye of the population of this country, and that we seem to be putting less emphasis on the youth in terms of percentages, you know, whether it's procurement or employment equity or whatever other measures that we put in our policy. We're silent on percentages for youth, procurement or employment equity, as is not the case with, say, for instance, women and black-owned companies. And I think we need to be more decisive and more specific, especially with youth, because we need to employ more youth in general. And I know that the mining industry has a sizable percentage of youth employed in the sector, but we need to push the bar a little bit more. I'm also concerned about the 44% procurement that is going to companies that are less than 50% compliant on triple PEE. It's a huge number going to people who are unwilling to transform. And I know that it might be a slightly unfair statement to some companies who are trying and are failing for various reasons, but we have to constantly push the limits. We have to keep pushing the bar so that people try a little bit harder, because we have a mammoth task of transforming this industry, of transforming the workplace and the economy in general. So, yeah, that 44% for me has always been a problem. And I would suggest that we call it. It's a bit late now, these things that I'm talking about, but I guess, you know, because we're in constant discussion about policy, it's worth discussing. The use of the word housing is problematic for me, in that it speaks primarily of just houses. I think it should be settled, because then that is more inclusive. It includes schools, roads, and everything else, which are important, I guess, in improving the living conditions of our people. And then also, I have a slight misgiving about the levels at which we're pushing beneficiation, or the intensity with which we're pushing beneficiation is not hard enough for me. We're still very nice. We're still very, and I think I understand in the sense that in conjunction with the DTI and all the negotiations that we may have with BRICS partners, and also it becomes a complex issue. But still, as a country, we have a responsibility to push for more beneficiation. And so we can't be nice. We have to push the levels a bit harder, so that locally produced goods, the percentages need to be higher. You know, beneficiation, whether it's downwards or sideways, it doesn't matter. But we have to push for more beneficiation to happen, so that we're employing more people in this country and we're producing more, and I think it will help the economy as well. The enforcement of these BBBE codes, I think, will always be a problem, in the sense that we haven't quite mastered as a country, and I think this is a discussion that we then need to have as cabinet, and in particular where this department is concerned, you know, have more discussions with DTI. In terms of the enforcement of BBBE codes, because we're struggling in a huge way. We're not transforming industries, and it's not just the mining industry. I read somewhere that we're sitting countrywide, we're sitting at less than 30% of transformation. 22 years down the line, it's unacceptable. And so, while all of these numbers may look good to the eye, I think we need to put more focus into how we then implement these codes, and I don't know if it means that the department sectorially needs to go unilateral, or I don't know, but something needs to happen. We need to push the bar so that we're implementing these BBBE codes, so to speak. And I know that it might be difficult, in the sense that government has not taken a stance to actively control what happens in the private sector, which is something that we would have done as the EFF, I guess. But the fact that these codes exist means that there's a willingness, there's a recognition that something needs to happen there. And so we need to find mechanisms of implementing these BBBE codes in an urgent way so that we were transforming the country a lot quicker and a lot more efficiently. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's good in the world to say that production in South Africa has picked up. It has, I think, by 2 or 3%. I'm not sure what it was, around about there. Sorry? 10.4.
And through the chair, if I may.
Yeah, sure, please.
Okay, I think it's lengthening from the second quarter as well. There's been some improvement to the tune of about 11.8% earlier on, and at about 3.4% productivity overall, mainly with platinum on about 10.4% thereabouts. But I think for us, what is important, honourable members, is that although it's still where we are not expecting, I think it's where to work together with the sector to make sure that we see the productivity and also the contribution to the GDP increases. I think what's important, and I think the process that we're embarking upon through the PPC, including the issue of the bill, I think it gives investors confidence. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. I think you're quite right, but one has to compare it with other countries as well. And I think throughout the international spectrum, and I was about to mention China, because I think China has either 10 or 50% increase, totally unexpected. So it's not, it's an international phenomenon, it's not a, when production increases or demand increases internationally, and so when demand falls. But the point is, comparatively, do we do better or do we do the same or do we do poorly than other countries? And that's the issue. It's about how do we compare with other jurisdictions. For instance, Australia, who grew at some stage 15%, and we grew hardly by 1%. And that's the questions we need to ask. Why do we grow with 1%, other jurisdictions with 15 or less or more? And it's in your regulatory regime and your mineral resources and. So it's a whole number of factors that eventually determine what investment and what production and what output you have. But more to your slides, the concern is, and that's why my concern is that, and exactly what Mr. Mabuza said, is the research and development is a shadow of itself. And one should go and investigate why is that so. Because if you understand why that is so, get to the root causes of that, then one can introduce amendments or change which will automatically ensure that there is an uptake in research and development. But why is it when there was a massive bull, a massive amount of money allocated to research and development at a certain point in time, compared to now, which is hardly there? Why? I don't know why. Maybe you've got the answer. But to go and then say, but I will then compel you to fund research and development. Is that the best way to do it? I'm asking the question. Where in the past it was done voluntarily, now you're forcing. But in addition to that, the consequence of it, not only by itself, not only by this one introduction of a obligation, leads to what they call pay dirt. What is economically mineable? Every single percentage of tax increase, every single obligation, whether it is administrative, whether it is got to do with a higher SLP percentage of your turnover, whatever the fact may be, leads to the serialization of your reserves eventually. Because the fact that you have 3.5 trillion or 2.5 trillion rands worth of resources, eventually what the amount of reserves are, I'm not sure, leads to less that is mineable, more being left in the ground, leading to eventually, by indirect consequence, to more legal miners, leading to a situation where you have less ore being removed. That's a consequence. That is the bottom line of this all. So you can keep on adding to that equation. What are you doing? You're having mining companies saying, well, and I'm remining, I'm not going to mine X percentage of ore because it's not economically mineable. It doesn't make sense to mine it. So I'm not saying that what all of these issues are wrong or right. What I'm saying is whatever you introduce in obligation, which has a cost consideration, that is the consequence. So whatever you do, that is the cost consequence. So if you want to, in a good time, say, well, there's a higher margin for companies, the amount of gold is now 1,300 and something rand or dollars or whatever the fact may be. If it increases to 2,000 rand or dollars, then there's a higher margin to mine more of these reserves and ore. If it's not making a profit, it's going to mine less and less and less of those ores. And you have a consequence of the mining industry coming to an end sooner than it would have done under normal circumstances. That's a consequence. So that is where you should start, is how you endure the mining industry to sustain itself for a longer period, not for a shorter period of time. And of course within reasonable measures. Now, the concern I have is a lot of these percentages is like the human resource development. The mining charge retains the 5% levy amount in line with the Schedule 4 of the Income Tax Act. Now to me, I'm not sure what that means. Honestly, I don't know what that means. Now, I take it that the 5% leads to what eventually is payable by mining companies in terms of a very intricate formula which eventually determines what that 5% comes down to. But could you explain it to us, or to me at least, in more layman's terms, not being a tax expert, what exactly are you saying when the mining charge retains a 5% levyable amount along with the Federal Fourth Income Tax Act for Solicitor? Explain that to me just in the most understandable language. Then, you say in page 14, a prescribed 1% of revenue will be contributed towards mine community. A 1% of what? A 1% of... just 1%, I understand. It says applicable to both communities, proximal to mines and major labor sending areas, charging to use 1% of revenue. Is that a revenue? Is it gross revenue? Is it gross revenue? Is all revenue? In other words, when you make a loss or a profit, is of revenue generated by the company? If you look at page 11, it's about procurement. Goods, capital goods and consumables are combined into one category of mining goods with a target of 70% of total procurement budget. And then an important part, which to my purpose of my question, excluding non-discretionary expenditure. If I understand correctly, non-discretionary expenditure is something like electricity, human resources, wages, your fixed items on a budget. Now, it means that over which you have a budget which you can adjust, which is a very small part normally of a budget. But considering that the biggest part of any budget is normally wage bill, electricity in the case of mining companies, rent or lease or property, maintenance, those kind of costs. Can I just understand what's the reasoning behind excluding non-discretionary expenditure? Because I'm sure when the non-discretionary expenditure is included, the percentage or what mines pay on inter alia the state and other expenses are much higher percentage wise than would appear to be when you exclude it than when you include it. So So I'm just trying to find out why you've excluded. What's the reason behind excluding it? But I'd like to end up by just saying that the biggest beneficiator of mining is not his shareholders. It's not his employees. The biggest beneficiator of mining in this country is the state. In terms of its taxes being paid to the state. So if the purpose is to try and ensure redistribution of wealth, etc., it's the state that benefits the most from mining by taxes, as I've said, from indirect taxes, from pay as you earn, VAT, and I think it's 40% of at least direct tax payable is what mines pay, excluding pay as you earn, excluding VAT, excluding. So all I'm saying is that the state should act in a way that does not kill the golden goose, if it's still golden at this point in time, which I'm not sure. Thank you.
First, I'd just like to draw attention to the big thing missing from this. There doesn't seem to be anything about ownership levels. Please tell us what's happening there. A couple of general remarks. Just to amplify what my colleague has said, all of this, it's a whole lot of, a thicket of new laws. It's going to impose a cost on the industry. That iron law of economics, when you make something more expensive, you have less of it. So in our view, you make this is going to result in less mining. I think we should be honest about what we're talking about. And in slide four, it's talked about the aim is to de-racialize the mining industry. That's rather Orwellian when you attach it to a document, which is really a whole set of racial quotas. We may agree that opening access to mining is a laudable aim. However, our way of doing it would be very different to this. Could we see, please, a list of the 60 organizations who made submissions on this? And would we be able to get hold of some of those submissions if we asked for them? When you are discussing this with traditional leaders, are you only doing that through the National House of Traditional Leaders, or is there another process? And how do you determine who you're talking to there? You talked about aligning the mining charter definitions with the DTI definitions. Now, I know that you do address this in some measure, but just in general, did the mining charter change its definitions to align with the DTI's definitions, or has the DTI changed any of its definitions? Moving on to your negotiations with the Chamber of Mines, when do you expect them to be concluded, and how will you measure the success of those negotiations? Perhaps you could comment on slide 11. You talked about upping from requirements of 30% and 40% procurement to 70%. How is that a slight adjustment? I had a question about youth. What's the definition of youth? I mean, South Africa appears to have the oldest youth in the world going up to 35. Is that your definition? What happens to a company if it gets a contract and then it gets older than 35, or whatever your cutoff is? Do they lose the contract? Who checks on this? There's an immense amount of compliance that will be involved in this mining charter. When I spoke some time ago to one of the major platinum companies, they told me they had to hire 20 lawyers at head office just to do compliance. Now, maybe you can do that in a big company. What about the junior sector? The junior sector are going to be expected to comply with all this. Down to what level? What happens with somebody with a mining permit? Do they also have to comply with this? I think you're going to find you kill the junior sector if you impose this. In terms of procurement from surrounding communities,
again, it sounds good on paper, but I can envisage certain situations where there is simply nothing that you can procure from the surrounding community. Do you then have to procure from a labour sending area? What if there's no distinct labour sending area? Who decides all this? I'm very pleased to see that you're going to publish SLPs. As a matter of course, can I ask from when you're going to be doing that and how they'll be accessed? Because this is going to make it more expensive to mine, I'm interested to know whether you've done an impact assessment on the size of the mining industry and on employment in the mining industry as a result of these rules. The next question relates to the Transformation and Development Agency. You've got a funding formula there. Can you tell us how much a year is going to be taken in through this formula as the industry currently stands? Give us an approximation. You talk about the difference between the national and provincial demographics. Surely it's one or the other. I don't understand what applies in this case. You reference, I think, another court case. Could you please explain that further? Slide 17 talks about 60% senior management should be BEE or employment equity, of which 20% should be black females. Does that mean one third of that 60% should be black females, or 12% of that 60% should be black females? Just clarify that for me, please. Now, there's quite a lot of detail set down in this thing, and yet negotiations with the Chamber of Mines are still continuing. Are we right to assume that anything that's set down here has been agreed to by everybody concerned, that there's no chance of it changing, or is there still a possibility that some of it might? I'll stop there.
Yes, Honorable Chair, thank you very much. Mine is related to slide number 6, bullet number 1, 2, 3, 4. You made mention of all those formations, but you left one formation of women. Or is it because it's included in the other slide? I'm not quite sure. If I can get clarity with regard to that, I would be very happy. On slide number 7, bullet number 1, background, to date, the mining charter is being presented to some communities and traditional leaders. Some. I'm not sure because I thought it would be saying presented to communities, because if you include some, it might not have a problem in the future. The other one, Chair, relates to this thing of empowering of women. I went to several mines in the country, and I'm not sure as to whether, if you are talking of women, are you talking of skilled women with skills, or are you just talking about women window dressing to say to us that no, we have employed women in several mining companies only to find that they don't have skills? Those are the women, black women in particular, who are making tea or shipping. I haven't seen it's going to be controversial. I haven't seen a white a woman sweeping or making tea for his bosses. Do we have a program or a plan in place to address this problem that we are faced with? The other one, Chair, relates, I had Ntate Mabuza saying on employees, slide number 18, on employees with disabilities, 2% employees with disabilities previously were white, and now they are targeting black to be part of the process of employment in mining, in mining. Can I check with you, Ntate Mabuswa, that are you phasing out these 2% of whites with disabilities and bringing in blacks by 2%, or you are increasing this 2%, it's going to be 2% whites, 2% blacks, people with disabilities, or they are going to share this 2%. I didn't get to very clear with that that day, Mabuswa. If I can get the clarity with regard to that, it will be good for me. The other one, Chair, that Mabuswa continuously was speaking about it, saying black people, black women, black female, black, all is black. It's like it's very controversial, because where we are now, we are no longer talking about blacks only. We must talk about historically disadvantaged. In this country, there are Chinese. I repeat these things for sure for the third time. I'm not representing them. They are not my friends. But I'm saying
we may never know this day.
Yeah, you may never know, but I'm not a friend of all these guys. I'm not even a friend. I'm your colleague. These Chinese guys, they are saying they are historically black, disadvantaged South Africans. If you talk about historically disadvantaged blacks, are you also referring to Chinese? Because they are part of this country now. Some of them are born in this country. Like the Indian communities, they came here in 18-something. They are part of us. They are part of the population of South Africa. So initially when you talk of, categorically, you talk of historically disadvantaged. You talk of blacks, whites, Indians, and colored. These other fellows, you don't talk about them. I'm not representing their views, but they are part of us. They are here in South Africa. They are doing business. They are born in this country. Are you also including them? When you talk of historically disadvantaged communities, maybe also that Mabuswa, this thing of blacks, let's clarify it correctly, categorically. So what do you mean by black? Maybe those are part of blacks, these Chinese guys. Let's clarify it, because it's Ntate Madiba at some point was very angry, very furious about blacks. It was mentioned by the DG, Tadem Sisa, in his presentation was talking blacks, blacks, blacks. And Madiba was very angry. And he was hard on Tadem Mzisa about that. So maybe in the future, if you don't have an answer, Ntate Mabuswa, as a belief media, don't manufacture that answer. Apologize and say in the future, in the near future, maybe after 5 years, so some of us might not come back yet. Those will be yet. At least Ntate Mabuswa, you can write historically disadvantaged communities and specifically categorize them. I'm referring to Indians, colored, blacks, whites, Chinese, and these other fellows. Thank you very much, Che.
I can see that yesterday it was one, but we are two today. Honorable Chair, let me appreciate the presentation on the mining charter as made by the officials of DMR. I would have a few questions of clarity, Honorable Chair. On slide number 3, they put it that it's still a long way for the mining industry to be fully transformed. And
I would like to know if is it still an industry that is captured or dominated by what? Whites? Not since we see that not much transformation has happened. So what is DMR doing in terms of transformation purposes through you, Chair? Is this over the years? I mean, I look at historically, the mining charter was introduced in 2004, assessed in 2009 and 2015, but we still, if you look at the stock exchange listed companies, they are predominantly white dominated companies. You still haven't seen any empowered companies featuring high on the list. So are we really seeing transformation? Secondly, Chair, on slide number 4, it speaks to expanding the existing skills base for empowerment of black persons. And how is DMR ensuring that we are able to expand the existing skill base? How many bursaries is the DMR providing per fiscal to ensure that we can be able to measure if we are really expanding the existing skill base? And also within its entities, Honorable Chair, how many bursaries are made available there? It still doesn't sit well with me, Honorable Chair, to know and stomach that the President and CEO of MinTech earns 2.8 million rand, and yet he is a beneficiary of a bursary a scheme within MinTech. His deputy earns 1.6 million rand and is still a beneficiary of the bursary schemes within MinTech. How are we therefore, Honorable Chair, measuring and seeing how we are going to expand this existing skill base? If on our doorstep you have our young people on the campaign of hashtag fees must fall, and yet it seems like funds are not accessing them, but are accessing people that are already earning and employed, Honorable Chair. How many is accounted by the mining houses? And I'd really want to understand your own audit in terms of DMR. There is the mining houses there, and each mining house, what are they doing to ensure that we are able to realize the expansion of existing skills? So what bursaries do they have, and how many young people are benefiting from those bursaries? How much of their earnings or profits are they contributing back to ensuring that we are able to expand the existing skill base? Also, Honorable Chair, to dwell further on this, I'd like to understand what is the targeted number of bursaries per fiscal as to try and be able to measure if indeed we are expanding the existing skill base. So what tool or mechanisms are in place within DMR to say the target within the mining industry is to score about 20,000 bursaries per fiscal? And how do you then go to measure that is being attained? Which entity is providing bursaries, and how do you allocate that? Because it's easy to just put there, expand the existing skill base as a means for empowerment of black persons. But how are you going to go about ensuring that we achieve that? Honorable Chair, on slide number 5, a last bullet point, it says promote beneficiation of South African mineral commodities. And I'd like to know through you, Honorable Chair, what has DMR done to further the beneficiation of commodities in RSA? Because it still looks like that we are sending our commodities out of the borders of South Africa for beneficiation. If you look at slide number 7, Honorable Chair, I am happy that my honorable traditional leader from Gauteng, Honorable Lorimer, has covered me on this, but let me emphasize it further. Through which structures were traditional leaders engaged, and what were their main concerns regarding the mining charter? Were there any alarming concerns that should be noted by the committee through the deliberations, Honorable Chair? You may bear with me, Chair, find the next question through this presentation put to us, and I think it's centered around what another traditional leader seated next to me, Honorable Matlala, has come to be very passionate about, the issue of racializing the sector. 50% black people, 20% of which must be black females, 60% black employees, and 20% black females should be on senior management. It's a bothering factor with me, Honorable Chair. I am a deployee of the African National Congress to this August House of Parliament in the National Assembly, which has been a champion of a non-racial and non-sexist society, values which are enshrined in our Constitution, Honorable Chair. These terms are bordering on racial discrimination and exclusion of other racial groups. The struggle for liberation was an inclusive, a struggle of the oppressed, as previously disadvantaged targeted groups. I would therefore, Honorable Chair, want to understand and get confirmation from DMR as to what they mean when they say black people and black females. I work in my office with Chriselle Lewis, and I'm certain that being a South African woman, I would not want to see her excluded of a opportunity of that manner. So you need to be very explicit about this. If black is used inclusively to refer to Africans, colors, Indians, Chinese, as Honorable Matlala is saying, you need to stipulate that so that we understand. Or else, I will have to point it out, Honorable Chair, you are not a racist when you just say white only, you are termed a racist. When you say black, you are bordering on racism, and that is racist tendencies. It just reminds me of Animal Farm, you know, the pigs took over so that every day 4th after they had taken over, the pigs shall govern and be the senior citizens on the farm. And I hope that it is not a repetition of the past, Honorable Chair. And I would really like Comrade or Honorable Matlala rather like to get that emphasis from the department so that we know if we are speaking from one page. Lastly, Honorable Chair, on slide number 21, it speaks to the Mining Transformation and Development Agency. The agency will manage the 2 livable amount for skills development and the 1% annual turnover to be contributed by foreign suppliers. Beautiful wish list, Honorable Chair. But I'd like to understand what penalties and repercussions are in place should mining houses fail to comply contributing these amounts. Thank you, Chair.
Allow Mr. Mabuza and the colleagues to respond that we are, including the issues of youth, will respond to that on what are we doing to try and deal with the beneficiation. And we do concur as well on the issue that we have to work together to grow the sector significantly. In fact, it's government imperative, one of the government imperatives to do that in achieving the NDP and the 9-point plan that is presented by the president. However, I think for us it's also important that, and we've, through our introduction, we've clearly also highlighted the fact that our experience when through the implementation of the charter, there's been a lot of challenges that we had to deal with, including an outcry from BEs that we have not been substantial, the transformation, and including also communities, as honourable members would know through the work that we've been doing, the oversight work that we've been doing, communities are constantly also raising concerns to us. I can talk to Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest, Olobeni as well. Some of them are saying, why should we even have a mine here if we're not going to benefit? And hence through the input that we made on the NKRDA bill, including the review charter, is to try to balance that. And obviously respecting the fact that there must be substantial growth from the mining sector or for the investors as well. I think it's a constant engagement that we have with stakeholders. But that, for us, honourable members, what is important is, and we try and encourage the sector to do, because we believe that government cannot achieve the goals of our constitution and the imperatives that are referred to alone. We had a sense that some of the companies, you know, they want to comply to the latter. Let's say sometimes some of them we feel that they want to be compelled to do this. I think there should be a responsibility as well being carried by the respective holders for transformation to happen, to deal with the challenges that I've actually referred to. But the other issues Mr. Mabuza will touch on them, including the R&D issues that you've referred to. And Honorable Schmidt, Lorimer, there is a slide on ownership, but we clearly indicated that because it has not been yet been finalized, we're still having engagements with the chamber on this matter. And as we know, there is also the declaratory order matter that we're engaging together with them. The President has requested us to settle the matters of court. And we are at an advanced stage, but it will be difficult for us to put a time frame and say by this time we'll finalize. But there is engagements that are led by the minister that are taking place, and there's substantial work that has happened. Now, you've also referred to how do we measure success. I think for us, success obviously will be measured by the fact that there is agreement on this issue of ownership. Okay, we won't agree on all the issues, but most importantly, the request by the president that the disciplinary order should be dealt outside the court process. But it cannot be a milestone alone. For us as a department, and ministers have even clearly indicated this, to say we have an open door policy. It's important for us to continuously ensure that there is a constructive relationship between ourselves, business, organized labor, and also obviously communities and other important stakeholders to ensure that there's sustainability in the sector. There will be a lot of issues that are being perceived as challenges that we have to deal with. Some of them very difficult. Some of them it will be difficult to get agreements, in a short space of time. But if you do have a constructive relationship between the stakeholders, I think it makes it much easier to go through the challenges that we are experiencing. So I think it's also important that we continuously have a healthy relationship with our stakeholders, and we are striving to build it to ultimately achieve the goals that we have set for the mining sector. And all the other issues the honourable members have given my colleagues to respond to, including the issue of that Inkosi and Matlala have raised, and the issue of skills. But now, if I come to skills, before Mr. Mabuza comes in, obviously we don't have now the actual numbers, mm-hmm. but we agree with the Inkosi on this matter, that, and Mr. Mabuza has clearly highlighted in his talk that the biggest challenges that we've been having is the substantial skills development of our youth, and including women, and it's our attempt through this tool to deal with that. There is substantial funding that is provided through the CETA landscape, including the NQA, for that matter. They are providing bazaars. To answer that, in the report, last year they provided about 1,000 bazaars. We do provide bazaars, and the entities that do provide bazaars, but they are not enough. We do agree, given the challenges that we're experiencing. And also, Mr. Mabuza will also touch on what are we doing, including what are the possible contributions from the sector to deal with those. I'll just end it for now and request Mr. Mabuza to touch on it.
Thank you, DC.
Thank you,
Honorable Members. I'm assisted as well by Ms. Madie to my left. Just starting on the question of youth, Honorable Mkwena. We have had a very detailed engagement on the topic. And I think one of the questions that was asked after you on the threshold for youth, is it 35? And I think in terms of our definition, 35 is indeed the threshold for youth. Now, the problem with the legislative instrument, which is the reality we are confronted with, is that unlike your race or your gender, youth is not a permanent arrangement. On the one hand, we are talking and refuting the notion of once empowered, always empowered. under the ownership element. And so on the other side, you might then have to deal with the consequences of once a youth, always a youth, for instance. And so then it becomes important to balance that and say, if someone who's at 34 years, for instance, and you've made provision for a youth, and correctly they're 34 years old, and mining is a long-term business, and they qualified at the point of entering, and you have made provision for youth under ownership. So what happens in 2 years' time when you go back and evaluate the state of compliance? And now they are 36 years old. They are above the threshold. In terms of the law, would you then go and say, because it's a regulatory requirement that you must have this percentage of youth, and the youth that you had 2 years ago are no longer youth, it becomes a nightmare to manage. And it is for that reason that you look at us having provided explicitly, and all these elements apply to the youth, by the way. But where we have applied explicitly for the youth, is you see in terms of procurement, we have looked at goods, and this is a whole new opportunity for you. We have provided 5%, within 5%, we did not only provide for black women, but also for the youth. And in the next slide, for services, we applied and made reservations, I think, an exclusive 5% set aside for the youth on the services. It's easier to do it here because you procure on a continual basis. It's not a permanent arrangement. And so if you are procuring from the youth, and they are growing, they become competent, and that's why we have left the percentage lower, so they can continue doing business with the mining industry, because automatically they fall under the 10% or the 44%. So you have not excluded them. So you are saying, with my analogy, someone started at 34, and they were youth, and they are excellent at their business. 2 years later, they may not be youth, but they are supplying the business with the goods and the services that they require, and they can continue doing so because they are provided for in terms of that 10% and further on in terms of the 44%. That is the first area where we have explicitly provided for the youth. And then on skills development, Honorable Mkwen, our focus on skills development is really providing for the youth. And the initiative that we have put in place is not insignificant by any proportion. I accept that some of the skills development requirements relate to the existing workforce. Because, you know, traditionally, the industry has grown on the backbone of illiteracy. And so this intervention, then in part, the skills development is to make sure that the existing workforce can be empowered with the knowledge to the benefit of the industry. We believe that health and safety will improve, for instance. We believe that productivity of the business will improve, and a whole lot of other efficiencies that we will be able to achieve. But then, in part, the skills development is our way of saying, if we empower the youth with the skills, then they can be anything they wish to be in their democratic country. And we would have created and empowered them to fish, as opposed to handing them out the fish. Because once we're not there to give them the fish, they will not be able to continue living in this wonderful country that you have secured for them. I think, Honorable Mukwena, the 44%, perhaps you misunderstood what we meant. We are not saying 44% must be given to non-compliant companies. We are saying that
That 44%, which is the remainder, because firstly the 30% is for SMME. And then we have the 5% for women and youth companies. And so we are saying those companies that are already in the country, for instance, those that are providing capital goods that even South Africa itself does not have the capacity to produce right now. But the industry must continue. Part of our strategy is to say that those foreign companies must be allowed to invest in South Africa. And so if they invest in South Africa, we then have an expectation that they must be compliant with our transformation policies and legislation. And part of that is that they should be at least at level 4 BE in terms of the DPI code, and they must have a minimum of 26% empowerment. Because then when you have active empowerment, it is also part of ensuring that those who are the 26% part of the foreign companies can then begin to learn how the companies operate, and hopefully into the future they can branch off and develop their own businesses and go forward. And so that 24% is by no means a target that says if you are non-compliant, come and do business. The laws of South Africa allow you as a non-compliant entity to do business with the mining industry. That I think that one is, I'm hoping it is being clarified. And I think on beneficiation, and I think let's look at beneficiation, Honorable Member, Honorable Mukwena, like this. We have moved from capital goods at 40% to 70%. Locally manufactured. That for us is an aspect of beneficiation. It goes beyond just talking about beneficiation and creating a captive market. Because sometimes we talk about beneficiation and we forget to close the loop. That is one thing to beneficiate, but unless you have the captive market, you know, then you're going to beneficiate for what and sell where. And so that 70%, which is an increase from the 40%, is in fact creating a captive market for beneficiation. And it comes from 40%, 50%, you know, for consumables, and then 40% from capital goods. We would hear from you, Honorable Member, if you feel that the 70% lacks ambition, given that, you know, we must take into consideration that we operate in an open market system. We must still interact with the global economy, and we are already reserving the 70% for local manufacturing so that the other 30% we can remain in the global economy, because some of the products that we manufacture, we too would like to sell to others in other parts of the world. Honorable Smith, I think on the growth of the industry, it is perhaps correct that we are at the bottom of the new boom of the industry, which boom we must make sure that we don't miss again. And the growth in other jurisdictions, of course, we can do a comparative assessment. It's very easy, but obviously comparison must be always done within a context. And so, yes, the issue of R&D is very interesting for us. I mean, you'd recall, Honorable Schmidt, that pre-1994, South Africa was insulated from doing business with the rest of the world. And as soon as it was opened up,
Unfortunately, one of the things that we had lost at that time was research and development. And yes, I would love to see our industry doing more research and development. And in fact, as you were asking a question, I quickly went back to our study, our comparative study that you were talking about. We looked at Australia, for instance. Australians have a mining charter equivalent. Canadians have a mining charter equivalent. In Australia, on labor requirements, it is a compulsory requirement to employ local labor in Australia. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. The same happens in Canada. They compel you. In fact, you can't do business in Canada unless you have a company that is domiciled in Canada. And the board must be represented by Canadians, and the employment must be that of Canadians first before you can go and get anybody else. And so I don't see how it is okay in Canada and Australia to insist on employing their own without taking investment away. And it is a problem when South Africans insist on employing their own people, the majority of which happens to be black. And we will come to the issue of black when we get to the question of Nkosi Mandela. On goods and services, the same applies in Australia. The legal requirement in Australia that all measures must be taken for local suppliers and for the firms to ensure that local contractors are given local services supply opportunities to tender. It is an established practice. We just call it mining charter. They call it all sorts of other things. In Canada, they call it value addition. They insist on research and development using their own institutions. They insist on labor. They insist on capacity building and training, and so on and so forth. And we're quite happy to share with you this comparative study that we have done. It spans ownership, procurement, employment equity, mine community development, human resources development, as well as research and development. And I think that as South Africans, we just need to be bold sometimes and not, yeah. So you know, so is research and development and other elements necessarily going to sterilize the economic viability? I think to the contrary, honorable member. If you read the declaration that was signed by stakeholders in 2010, which we also quite happy to make available to you, all our stakeholders signed this declaration on sustainability and meaningful transformation of the industry. One of the things we recognized at that time is that, one, we cannot transform an industry that is declining. Two, that in South Africa, the industry cannot grow unless it transforms. And for that reason, the stakeholders agreed that the growth of the industry and transformation go hand in hand. They are symbiotically reinforcing of each other. And that you cannot achieve the productivity, the efficiencies, and so on, unless we transform. For instance, it may be a cost to invest in research and development. But if you invest in research and development, you find solutions that you require to grow the industry. And so if it means we are saying to you
go and find the solutions that will sustain you and sustain your efficiency so that the resources are not sterilized. I think that is a noble thing to do. The 5% levyable, I think in simple terms, as you say, Honorable Schmidt, is that in 2010 we said, give us 5% of payroll. Set aside 5% of payroll and invest it in skills development on your own. And then report those initiatives back to the department. And so after we have engaged with the stakeholders and so on, and some of the mining companies, and looked at the skills development, the term leviable amount means that out of your payroll, there are certain allowed deductions. And so it is 5% not of the whole payroll, but of those allowable, excluding those allowable deductions. So it's a 5% of a slightly smaller figure, but more streamlined, because that is an established practice that we are connecting to. And it is for that reason that we have shifted towards retaining the percentage as 5, but no longer using the whole basket of payroll, but saying payroll less the allowable deductions. Non-discretionary expenditure, it's that non-discretionary expenditure as it relates to the procurement budget. So it is already not involving your wages and so on. But because the utilities are part of your procurement budget, and as a procurer, you have absolutely no discretion on where you spend your utilities. You will pay your municipality. So it does not make sense for us to include the utilities in the procurement budget for the purposes of transformation. So we are looking at that budget where discretion exists for a right holder. And that discretion, we are providing guidance for it to be dedicated towards transformation initiatives. I hope that that clarifies the issue that you raised, Honorable. I think we need to, and perhaps we must present to you the share of the value from the mining industry. I think the percentage of 40% that is gained by state perhaps makes an over-representation of the value that the industry contributes to the state. And you say that is excluding payee. I think we must go and do that analysis and bring it back to the committee so that we can talk about that one. Honorable Lorima, I think the issue of ownership the DG has dealt with. Sure, you can see the list of the 60 organizations that made submissions. I think it will only be fair for us to ask those who made these representations if they are comfortable for us to make them public to you and the committee. So on the alignment of the mining charter with the DTI codes, we did say that the BBBEE Act is the overarching legislation. And as the custodian of transformation, we are aligning to it in terms of the terms and definition and concepts, not the other way around. I think we've dealt with the definition of youth.
No, permit holders are not required to comply to the mining charter. It is mining right holders that are required to comply. And I think I want to correct on procurement from surrounding communities. Local for procurement purposes means the Republic of South Africa. There are, of course, other, you know, parts of procurement that we will necessarily have a bias towards communities, towards local communities. But procurement is from the Republic. The agency, the formula that you are talking about, 2%. Well, I haven't worked out the leviable amount, but the payroll of the industry is about 80 billion rand on average. So you may deduct between 10 and 20 billion rand if you take out the leviable amount, and you take 5% of that, and then you take 2 percentage points of that. It works out to several hundred. And the intention thereof is, and I think Honorable Nkosi Madiba was asking about the bazaaries and the structures that we are using. The intention is that we are struggling right now to obtain and direct the skills development program. That, you know, if you ask us a question, how many thousands of students today are supported by the industry? It's a little bit of a touch and go. We may have the figures for the DMR and the SOEs. It will come to several, perhaps tens or a few hundreds. But if you look at the industry in its entirety, it will be proper for us to say, we are supporting 10,000 or 20,000 students, and we can come and present that to you with confidence. And part of establishing this agency is to make sure that we can streamline our skills development initiative. And for all intent and purposes, the agency will be developed and constituted by government, by business, and several other interested and affected stakeholders. So it is not just government saying, you know, bring us the money and we'll decide how we deal with the skills development. Because we must be responsive in the true sense of the manner to the skills requirement that this industry requires in order for it to go forward for years ahead of us. So you'll help me with national information. Honorable Khoshi Matlala, on the presentation to some traditional leaders. I think the reference to some, communities and traditional leaders. The reason we said some is because we have started and are continuing. And we are hoping that our coverage would be fairly good, that once we have concluded that process, we can then say we have indeed consulted our communities. We did not want to come and create an impression that we have already consulted the communities, because then we'll be misleading you. That was the intention of saying some until that process is concluded. So on the empowerment of women, yes, there had been instances of fronting, but there had also been instances where we have had cases of true empowerment of women, albeit a handful of them. I mean, if you look at Mama Nkosi Mashile, who not only owns a big manganese mine, as a black woman who would otherwise not have been able to, and she's now investing in a beneficiation plant, something that a new plant for beneficiation of manganese. And so if we can get even more women, and its empowerment should not only be about ownership, should also be about skills, about procurement, and employment. And so if you look at some of the positions held by women in the industry today, there are some positions that we believe are genuine employment of women in with technical skills, adding real value to the industry and not employed on the basis of their gender. However, that is, we agree that is not necessarily always the case. And so part of the streamlining of the skills development towards the agency is so that part of the mandate of the agency would be under the skills development, you know, they will have a chapter on women empowerment. In respect of skills, also in respect of supplier development. This is the structure that we believe will assist us in taking our issues of women empowerment forward in a meaningful way. On the disabled employees, Honorable Matlala, we are leaving the percentage at 2%, and we are placing emphasis on demographics. And so we are saying that we would expect that the disability profile must be reflective of the demographic of the country. And so if a company has 100% white male, surely that is not reflective of the demographic of the country. And our expectation is that it should reflect the demographic of the country. How they get it will leave it to their creativity. We are interested in defining the ultimate goal. And so reference to black, and I think I will take this one from you, Honorable Matlala, and deal with it with the very strong motion by Honorable Mandela. The first thing is, we said that we are aligning the mining charter to the act, which act is passed by this house, the BBBEV Act. And we previously used historically disadvantaged South Africans. And because this alignment requires of us to align with this act that you as members have passed, you have accepted the use of the term black in that act as legislator. Number two, black is defined not in terms of black Africans only. It is defined in terms of black, colored, and Indian. So you have black Africans, and you have colored, and you have Indians in the category. The Chinese are not included under the category of black in the constitution, but they are included in the category of historically disadvantaged South Africans. Now, honorable members, part of the problem we have had in implementing the notion of historically disadvantaged South Africans is that we have had cases where some companies exclusively employed white women, because white women are part of the historically disadvantaged South Africans. And so they present to us as transformation an exclusive representation of white women. So in this context, it is not the intention on our part to move away from the very values that honorable members, honorable Mandela articulated of a non racial and non-sexist society. But to the contrary, we are saying because the whites and the black in this country have been miles away apart from each other, and the Constitution does not prohibit taking some corrective measures as part of normalizing our society, and therefore placing a particular emphasis on those members of society who have always been disadvantaged and marginalized. And I would argue that such measures hardly represent an inclination towards racism, other than an inclination towards normalization of society, which is a constitutional prerogative to normalize our society so that we cannot continue to have a highly divided society in terms of the benefits that they may enjoy. And if you look at the targets, for instance, if you talk about 60% of blacks, it is not even a national democracy that. It means that 40% can still be white. So you have the 60% that is black, but you have the remainder that says white people can still be part of the economic activity that we are taking forward. So I really just wanted to emphasize that point, that it is far from necessarily advancing the racist inclination other than to really take a step towards a normalization of our society. I think before I ask my colleagues to take others, the promotion of beneficiation I've already touched on. Oh yeah, the traditional leaders. We had not engaged the National House of Traditional Leaders yet. That is it. But in the days to come, when we conclude our presentation and our consultation, as we indicated, it is both the traditional leaders as well as the communities. We are looking at lining up and all the structures as far as we can. I think the penalties, the last one for me, is that the penalties for those companies that fail to comply with contribution to the agency. What we have done, Honorable Mandela, is we have not introduced sanctions for the agency, but for the charter in its entirety, that if you are non-compliant with the charter, then the sanctions applicable to the act will then be automatically be triggered and be applicable. I'll just ask Chair and Honorable Members and DG, my colleague, to respond to some of the questions.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and DG. I think Mr. Mabuza has responded to most of the questions. There's just two questions that I think he left out. The other one relates to the use of national or provincial demographics. I think there we are not prescribing. In the charter we say provincial and or national demographics. So it will be dealt with on a case-by-case basis, because the court case also decided against the blanket use of maybe provincial or national. So it will be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. The other question relates to Honorable Matala's question on why were women not consulted. I think what we did is when we published the Mining Charter for public comment, we then received the 60 submissions that DG alluded to. And in those submissions, there were no submissions that we received that are specifically from women organizations. So what we then we invited all the people who submitted written submissions to come for workshops, and due to the fact that we never received any from women organizations, then we never called them in. But we consulted a lot of organizations that included women in them, so we didn't necessarily exclude women. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. If I may as well, I think there was also one question that was from Honorable Loriman regarding whether we will be accepting further submissions or there will be any change. I think obviously they will be considered because we have opened up for another up to the end of December where we'll be engaging with communities and also some of the stakeholders as well, including the Chamber of Mines on the issue of ownership, because it's not yet concluded. So we would be considering those submissions before we finalize the review charter. Thank you.
Before Honorable Piginini, Honorable Rima, Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Mukwena, and Honorable Mande, I'm just worried about the pace that we are going with. And hopefully we'll be able to find a way how we're going to conclude this exercise. Because in my previous life, I used to have one experience where you ask me questions, I deliver the second keynote address, and you end up not getting time. Just few issues, probably I'm not going to deal with some of the issues now. The first thing is that let's check that case. I think it was in the Western Cape Correctional Services, and let's check that case, because in as much as it doesn't talk about, if I'm not mistaken, I still have to refresh my mind, in as much as it doesn't talk about, because the contention was about the overexpression of national demographics at the expense of provincial demographics, and there seems to be, in the judgment, a more bias towards provincial, I'm saying I may not be correct, there might be more bias towards provincial demographics than the national demographic, but I think we'll have to actually satisfy ourselves about that issue. The second thing I think it's important, just again on this thing, I'm not sure, Mr. Mabuza, again, on the Chinese case, whether the judgment is on historical disadvantage or is on blacks. The reason is that in as much as is on HDSA, it's not necessarily recognizing them per se as a judgment on the basis of just being HDSAs, but it deals with the issue of a specific, I think if I'm not mistaken, that's a population of not every person just by virtue of being Chinese, and you find yourself in South Africa, you are categorized as part of the historical, there is a cutoff point, something that makes that definition, that then allows them to be recognized as historical disadvantage, not general. I think I understand that thing, that very well. But what I think it has to be clarified, which I think honorable members were dealing with, is that, which I think in law, you can't succeed. So whether if that thing is challenged, you won't succeed. The definition of blacks specifically is Africans, not, you can't say black Africans. It's Africans, it's colored, it's Indians. It doesn't change, you can go anywhere. That's why you always have got dispute now about the trash, the numbers, how the percentages. But the reality is that if you categorize Africans alone as blacks, then you are completely misrepresenting the definition of blacks.
then we will deal with other issues which are historical on those bases. Now, the last thing is that, honourable members, we are dealing with the proposed amendments on the renewal of the mining charter. I just wanted to remind members that we are dealing with the proposed amendments on the renewal of the mining charter. Of which the last question I'm going to ask specifically is whether the people you are consulting with them, you treat them as the same. Because if you say with the Chamber of Mines you are negotiating with others you are consulting, that's what one may draw. I think it's important to get that clarity, because it seems to me that negotiations that are taking place with the Chamber of Mines, but others, there are consultations that have taken place with them. We may find ourselves sometimes dealing with issues that tomorrow we may be treated as accomplices. Honorable Beginning, you wanted to... Okay, now I'm being targeted for what I said before. Honorable Mandela, the reason I was giving Honorable Beginning is because he's in the middle and he had not spoken before you. Honorable Beginning, Honorable Lorima, Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Mukwe, please be sharp, straight to the point. In your wanting, it cannot overrule the prerogative of the chair. Continue.
Thank you. Honorable Chair, I think it's one thing, Baum Caesar and Baum Abuza, to say that black is inclusive and talks to Africans, colors, and Indians. And a different thing on implementation. In the last session, Honorable Chair, I asked what you meant by three black industrialists. I talk of this pigment, and you said, yes, they are this pigment, they are black. And again, I move from that premise and I look at the department seated in front of me, it's all black, this pigment. I worry about this constantly. And it's a genuine concern, Honorable Chair, that we seemingly speak and glorify this is inclusive, but on implementation it is not the case. And I'm very concerned that when it gets out there, this document on the mining charter, it's going to be interpreted as that. Because as you implement, you are not taking into account that inclusive definition. And you find that predominantly everything is swaying to an African perceived black. So I would really, Honorable Chair, through you, want to raise this issue to be looked at by the department. Again, in terms of traditional leaders, Chair, there was engagement with traditional leaders. So if it was not at a national level, was it a provincial level? Perhaps the department went to the Northwest and met with traditional leaders in the Northwest. So maybe it was a provincial forum. Again, maybe it was not a provincial forum. They went to Rustenburg for that matter. Then it became a regional a forum of traditional leaders found in and around Rustenburg, Pugen area. So that is what I was trying to ascertain. In terms of at what level and at what structure were they engaging with traditional leaders. But lastly, Chair, on the issue of skills development, I think that the department needs to find mechanisms of ensuring that what is envisioned is able to be accounted for, both from DMR and its entities in terms of the targeted skills development programs, and what is targeted if we say that the DMR and its entities will deliver 1,000 bursaries, then that should be within the fiscal and it should be able to be mapped out and investigated on. But I also do not want to make it a governmental responsibility only. The private sector, in terms of the mining houses, also have a duty and a role in this. So how are you as a DMR going to be able to measure that? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
No, thank you very much. Chair, this matter of skills development, Chair, has really been attended to in the manner in which I think that it suffices, Chair. But in passing, I will say on it. On the matter of policy, Chair, most of the time the investor will always agree to matters of transformation. But in the real sense, Chair, when they proceed with their work and they get their jewels on the ground, and then they become silent. You see, this silence of resistance, which is very nice, which we will never hear about it, but it does take place, Chair. Hence, it warrants department to act and deal with this section, what they talk about sometimes, Chair. Now, when they don't conform on matters of a mining chart, that's why always you come back, you review it, and you take it on board again. You know, it's because of that. Now, when you speak about other matters, you raise a matter that there's a partnership with DTI, which I'm very happy with that. Because I do understand that there are cross-cutting matters that will always be there, particularly on matters of economic development that are taking place. And therefore, I wish also to suggest that we need to make use of economic development as the one critical partner, because they deal with issues of competition commission. And those issues that they deal with, those ones are really experts on dealing with illicit, on dealing with other matters of money that they go out of this country without legal means, Chair. I think it will assist the department to go through on that particular one, Chair. Now, you might really understand me that it's not a question that I'm raising on this matter. I'm saying these are other issues that you must also explore. Now, the other issue that we always raise, it's the issue of beneficiation in many ways. You see, in this country, we are really rich on issues of raw material. That goes out of this country without being manufactured here in South Africa. So it'd be manufactured also elsewhere all the time. This issue of us fighting on issues of resources all the time will come back. Not because of we like. It's because we need to take a bold step this point in time to say, how do we make sure that on this matter of DGI, with black industrialists in particular, how to make sure that you play our part as the minerals department on making sure that we develop on our own and make sure that there are black industrialists that are coming to South Africa that are able to deal with this particular matters. I'm saying, I'm raising this because this campaign is far to be over, Chair, in utilizing these resources of DTI
in making sure we're black in their careers. I'm raising this matter to say there's no need of response to it, but I'm saying we need also to come to solution to problem of our country from time to time, because we can't always we want solutions without saying how we can take the South Africa forward together as we are here. Thank you very much.
That list of 60 people who made submissions, when can we have it? Please don't forget that. Just to drill down into what the chair said, in your discussions with traditional leaders, and I look forward to your answer on that, are there any changes that they suggested that you have taken on board? If there are, can you please tell us what they are? There was an extra slide, I think, on procurement. Could you send that to us as well, please, with that list of 60? You didn't answer when the SLPs will be published and how they will be accessed. There was no answer on my comment that, on my question that there was about any modelling done to assess the impact on investment and employment through the by the implementation of this mining charter. There you go.
Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would at least appreciate a copy of the comparative study to be able to see what the positions are in other industries, which you made mention of, Mr. Mbuza. And secondly, I guess that we'd probably be having another briefing because there's only work in progress. It's not been finalized. So I suppose with the consultation there'll be another briefing soon after it's been finalized. The third issue is, and it struck me whilst we were busy discussing, in terms of Section 100, the mining charter forms part of the Act, gives effect to it, which, and it goes back to the MPRDA amendment law, because if you look at what's happening here, we are only discussing it. We're not giving input. We're not being given the document. We're not making suggestions or proposals or anything else. It's a bit of a report back. And the next minute, you're consulting, and then it's published, and then it's part of the MPRDA. So maybe there's something in that equation which I've missed, but if the mining charter is to be dealt with in this way, I think we may have concerns as to legality of it, which I understand, there's already a court case about it, if I understand correctly. So if you go look at the process, and you look at the normal process for the adoption of legislation, which is normally a discussion of bill, the amendments are made, it goes to the committee, adopts it, gives a report to Parliament, debates it, goes to the NCOP. All these issues are bypassed, and it goes directly to the minister. The minister empowers, what's with the operative word, empowered to adopt a mining charter. So this is not everything except a legal process in terms of adoption of any document, in terms of the statute of Parliament.
Thanks, Chair. Just in general, I think we must not be apologetic about empowering black people in general and Africans in particular. This is the core of the reason why we talk about transformation. It's about those two issues. So we can't be apologetic. And those definitions, I think, are correct. That's one. Two, we must not be apologetic about enforcing compliance to these transformation measures, because as they stand, they're too mild. The BBBE Act is mild, the implementation thereof is extremely mild, and this is the reason why we're not achieving transformation in a speed that would be satisfactory. And then, Mr. Mabuza, the issue of the youth, I think you're mitigating the issues there, because we're very specific about the brackets within what we call the youth phase. And Stats SA is very specific about the bullseye, about within those brackets, who are the people who are, one, extremely unemployed and extremely uneducated or unskilled. So when we devise policies in terms of who do we procure to and who do we give business to, or who do we employ to in terms of the employment equity, those are the brackets within which we must look at. And I think it's mitigating to then say that no, we can't define it because 2 years later they would have gone out of the brackets. No. At the time that you give them the job, or you procure to them, or you skill them, that is the time at which it matters. So whether 5 years down the line they will have gone beyond 35 is neither here nor there, because what is important at this point in time is that we need to employ youth. And when we employ them, we then have to look at the bullseye. And that bullseye will start at around 19 to about 25. And those are the brackets within which we need to look. So, and then the issue of beneficiation. Again, we're mitigating by presenting Peter's figures about that 70% that you're talking about. The fact is that on directly consumable commodities such as coal, we can't count that. But on indirectly consumable commodities, more than 70% of it leaves the ground, gets into a truck, and goes to harbor. And that is where we're losing product. When we're losing consumables such as teaspoons, we produce chrome, we produce all of these commodities, but we can't produce a teaspoon. We can't even refine in some of these mines. And that's where we're losing a lot of the business, and we're hemorrhaging a lot of money from that practice. And that is what I was talking about by saying that we're not beneficiating enough. Whatever stats that we're presenting here, they do not even scratch the surface of how much we're losing. And then the 44% that I was talking about. The mining industry has become extremely sophisticated to the extent that I think we don't understand how they operate, because you're talking about investors who come in as a mitigating factor for that 44% in the business that's going towards them. The fact is, the mining sector then they devise a category that they call specialized services, right? And your contractors sometimes fall within that category of specialized services. Now, contractors take up the bulk of mining operation budget, right? So you will find that the bulk of the money that they're using or procurement that they're giving towards other companies is towards those non-compliant people. But they're non-compliant, but they then call them specialized service. So contractors can be specialized services, and then they're not investors. And because of that, they don't have to comply. And this is the reason why the mining sector is sitting at such a low, low level of compliance, is because they're procuring to people that they call specialized services who are not compliant to BEE Act. And it's for that reason that we then need to look again at how we implement this BEE, I think, because it's not assisting us. And we're too lenient to so-called investors as well. In Zimbabwe, the same people who are providing services to South Africa are providing services in Zimbabwe, but they're complying with the Indigenization Act there, which is more stringent than our BEE Act here. And so, it's not enough to say that we must be lenient to them because they're investors. No, we must be very strict with them as to what they must do and how they must do it. Two more issues. Broad-based black economic empowerment. We need to put more emphasis on broad-based. On broad-based, because the way it's been happening so far, I think it's immoral, for lack of a better word. We need to give more ownership to communities, to workers. And we need to put more emphasis on those, because we're enriching very few people at the expense of the growth of our people. The last point is, I just wanted to know if in your consultations you spoke to labor, because if you did speak to labor, the unions would have at least said to you that we need 12,500 workers. I'm sure you'd have received resistance. But what is the stance on at least a living wage for workers? Because the numbers that we're getting on the ground are extremely, extremely worrying. Thank you, Chair.
I note you. Let me just deal with a few issues before I give you Honorable Mr. Msuzaneti Mala. Now, the first one, Babu Mkwena, I'm sure we are all aware that there is a process that is underway at NEDLAC on the determination of the minimum wage. But I'm sure they'll answer whether that issue has it been considered. But I'll just say sometimes it's a territorial issue. Who leads the program of the determination on the issues of the minimum wage? Whether you can have it sectorally or you will have it according to what is taking place at night, like that becomes the technical thing. Few issues that I think are important just to... I take note of what you say. As I was sitting here, I then said, out of goodwill, there can be consequences. Currently, the department is locked in on this issue of once empowered, always empowered. Now, if you say it at entry, determination is at the entry point, the biggest problem is that you may have another once empowered, always empowered at the tail end of it, because the dispute now is about people who, at the entry level, decided somewhere to then say you are exiting. And when they exit, you still say, no, but at the point of entry, this is what was there. So can't say I did not comply. I'm just saying that issue, it's a matter that, I'm not saying it's wrong what you are saying, but it's a matter that it has to be considered beyond just the entry. It's the entry and the exit. I think it will have. That's why I was saying we might be going for a second area. I'm sure they will find a way of making sure that as you open up, you have got a tightening exercise that also addresses that problem, so that you don't confront a similar problem that you are already confronted with. I want honorable members to help me, because I'm someone who always places issues on the table, so that tomorrow, because this thing is, and this is probably my criticism, a very constructive one. You know, it's nice when you are in a meeting to know what you are agreeing on. Because I sit here as a chair, and then the next time I'm asked about something, and when I say, well, there was never a response on the matter. One, if we are dealing with the issue, in fact, before that, we must get this thing, in Mabuza. The form of this Mining Transformation Development Agents. And there is a reason I'm saying, if you can clarify the form,
just the forms that is going to take. Two issues that are emerging from honorable members, I think it's from Honorable Lorima and it's from Honorable Schmidt. I'm raising this thing because I don't want something that as a chair, tomorrow I may be accused of not having done what was agreed upon. First, we are dealing with a proposed amendment that is being presented to the committee for the committee to see whether it has got areas where it can assist or advise or raise concerns where they are. Now, there is a proposal that says, first, Honorable Schmidt says, can we get the comparison study? I don't have a problem with it. Honorable Lorima says, can we get the list of these 60 companies or these 60 submissions and their presentations on and their submissions, the names and their submissions? Now, I must be honest, sitting here as a chair, then I'm asking, then do what? Because I've never had that experience when people, now I have a picture of me carrying 60 submissions and then bring them and say, no, here are the 60 submissions. Because if a matter is raised in the committee, I must say this thing, when a matter is raised in the committee, then the committee has to process them if there is agreement. You know, I'm raising this thing because in the last time, just one example, when we this information was answered, in fact, I can say now for certain, two requests were made. The first one was for a senior counsel legal opinion. So then I was going there, but I looked at this thing. Honorable members, they allowed, and I think those members are genuine. They've got every reason to believe that when there is no opposition to what I say, does it mean there is agreement or does it mean there is no agreement? So I want us to have clarity on those two issues. Do we need this information and what do we need it for?
Can I
Honorable Mandela?
Clarification.
Yes, Honorable Donald.
I'm not proposing that, I'm certainly not prepared to read 60 or 60 submissions end to end. But I'd just like to see the list, and if there's one or two that I think would be interesting and useful for me to have a look at, I'd like to be able to ask the DMR whether I can get them, and if they have to check with the person, then yes, do so.
It's an individual. It's a question whether, I don't want to make it personal. It's a question whether, as individual committee members, we can have access to that information if we need it. Can get that request? Okay. No, the reason I'm running away is that I don't want to take a decision with a different understanding. What does it mean? Honorable Mande.
Thank you, sir. I think on the matter that you've just raised, if I had the response from DMR correctly, so it was said that they need to take the matter back to the people that made the submission to check first if they would be comfortable in their names being disclosed. So we are jumping the gun here, Honorable Chair, and I think first, before we get to that process of even asking for a list to be provided, let us allow the department to go and do its own assessment from the people that made submissions. But also, it has always been that once we have come to know of the process, we are, as a committee, able to call for public hearings. And if there are people that want to make submissions directly to the committee, Honorable Chair, that is always welcome. But I think for now, it's premature to be jumping to, oh, let me have the list when the DMR has said here in the committee meeting that we still need to go back to the people that made the submissions and get their confirmation if they are willing for us to release their submissions. And I think we should allow that process to see itself through and then get a response from DMR when they have been able to conclude that. But Honorable Chair, when I still have the platform, let me also talk to the matter raised by Honorable Mokoena, that we shouldn't be apologetic about being black. A struggle for liberation was not about Africans. It was about oppressed peoples of South Africa. Black, colored, Indian, traditional leaders, religious leaders, and gay activists. And in this new dispensation, we, as we do our work, should always be cognizant of that. And it is in that spirit, Honorable Chair, I am emphasizing that, yes, even though that we have coined it as black people, it ought to be inclusive to also translate colored, Indian, and other sectors. Thank you.
Okay. Look, I think the first issue, let's just say, Honorable Orima has clarified himself that he only wanted to know whether, as individual members of the committee, can have access to that information. I think the issue settles. It's not a committee matter. It's a question whether, if myself, I would want to have access to that information, the department, well, they will answer that one. I just wanted to know the stance from the side of the committee. On the other issues, let's leave them. But one thing we must can't run away from, we're just dealing with policy issues. I take the issues because I don't want us to go to other matters. Can we get the answers on the other questions that honorable members have asked? Very, very fast.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
If you have not answered them, I will make it a point that I sit with them during the break to assist you.
No, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Once again, in court, we surely concur on the issue of that to amplify the issue of the notion of black. And it should not be misconstrued. I think for us, we really fully agree. I think it's a fair input that has been made. I think moving forward, it's important that we will ensure that, you know, we clarify on this matter. I don't think it's a difficult that thing to do. But as we move forward, we have to more amplify. And on the issue of skills development in terms of mechanisms as well, something that we'll look at, but safe to say that there is requirements that MINES must report, especially on the issue of skills development at the CTAS, on how far are they going with that. But I think the mechanisms internally, we're looking at that. And on Honorable Beginini, on the issue of the matter that you raised on resistance. There is that perception that although some of the mining companies have gone a long way to ensure that there is improvement in this regard, there is that perception that, you know, there is resistance by other right holders on this matter. And I think for us as a department, we promote voluntary compliance with the law, not only with the provisions of the MPRDA, including the Charter, but also with the Mine Health and Safety Act, and hence that's why I think some challenges, some of the mining companies with safety and health-related matters. So we really promote voluntary compliance, so that it should not be government that insists that there must be conformance with the law. And as you correctly also highlighted, if there's no voluntary compliance, then there becomes a call out there to say probably there's a problem with our legislative framework. It needs to be strengthened. And sometimes people, when they feel that, then it brings this notion of legislative uncertainty. You know, and when we started earlier, we clearly emphasized that the review charter, and indeed not only the charter, but our bill, the MPRDA bill, consider the learning that we went through, through the implementation of the MPRDA and also the charter. And there were challenges that we've experienced. And with related to those challenges, you have been exposed to those challenges as honorable members, you know. And we are striving to ensure that where necessary, we strengthen to ensure that we have significant improvement there. And on issues of the beneficiation, we agree, including the comments that were made by Honorable Mokwena, but also to say that government strategically came up with the cabinet came up with the beneficiation strategy in 2011. It was adopted, and government has aligned its program to ensure that we limit, obviously, the issue that you've raised of it appears most of our minerals they go out of the country without getting value add locally. The NDP is more specific on it, you know, the 9-point plan as well is more specific on it. And it also, in terms of the current MPRDA bill on Section 26, we are putting more emphasis on this matter, where we are proposing that the minister should have the power to designate certain minerals, including the quantity, to do beneficiation. But we must also acknowledge the fact that you cannot do effective beneficiation without appropriate energy supply. And hence, there are also initiatives by government to also improve on this matter, including the issue of the infrastructure that is required to support the beneficiation. Honorable Lorimer, Mr. Mabosa will also touch on this matter in terms of requested on the assessment that we've done. But I think it's important to highlight that for any policy work or legislative like that we do, we have to do that assessment, that is a socio-economic assessment. We have to do it, including the bill. All the bills will definitely have to do it. But he'll also touch on that. As Honorable Mokwena has spoken to the issue of beneficiation, on the stance on living a wage for workers, indeed, Honorable Chairperson, there is work headed by the Deputy President through NETLAC. In fact, there is a team that they've been put together, and there is in fact a significant progress that has been made in this regard, and I suppose that reports will come through later. I think I'll give the colleagues an opportunity to respond to the other outstanding matters that have been raised by one of them.
Thank you, Deputy Honourable Chairman. That's wrong. We'll quickly Honourable Mandela on the engagement with traditional leaders. We had 54 traditional leaders in the province of the Northwest. So it was a provincial engagement. And so obviously that will then have to be expanded and be built upon. And I think linked to the question that Honorable Lorimer raised as to what is it that the traditional leaders raised with us. The key thing is that they welcomed the mining charter proposals, and particularly recognizing the inclusion of traditional leaders in our intention to deploy the transformation instrument. I think we welcome the comments, Honorable Beginning. The issue of publication of the SLP, Honorable Lorimer, our intention is to do it orderly. And we are developing regulations to guide the publication and how the accessing and all of those. And
and we've looked at this. In fact, the regulation has already been developed. So the question we're asking ourselves is, do we want to release regulations bit by bit, or would we rather have the MPRDA processed, finalized by yourselves, so that when we then release the regulations, we release all of the regulations? And then I think that's just the call that we need to make quickly. And then Honorable Schmidt asked an issue about Section 100, meaning that the mining charter forms part of the Act. I think this is a debate that the own legal opinion of this committee, as well as that of the state law advisors, clarified that you as legislators, you empower the minister to develop subordinate legislation. And that's why Section 100 says minister is empowered to develop the charter. You have empowered the minister to develop the charter. And so you did not say that you will process the charter. And I think that distinction is important. And so having empowered the minister to develop the charter, he is indeed executing that responsibility that that you have given him. And I think all the other questions the DG has responded to. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. It's for the first time you meet, don't I? Look, I think the first thing honorable members, we must agree, I was going to be worried. There is no way you can consult with people and then you don't give them space. Otherwise, why do you consult? I think let's agree that first, let's appreciate your presentation. At least it gives us time to, you want to, okay. Otherwise, next time when the chair is speaking, you will never have that privilege. So that you've got a good chair.
No, thank you, Chair. And my my sincere apologies to all of members and Chairperson. I think we've missed one important issue that Honorable Chairperson raised, that to say, are we treating all the stakeholders the same? I think we've not responded to that. We'd like to assure you that we do treat all the stakeholders the same. The issue of the Chamber of Mines, the negotiations specifically mainly on the ownership and the declaratory order that we are dealing with. But we'd like to assure you that we are genuinely speaking.
Thank you. Yeah, if you are given a chance, next time the chair may not give you that privilege to clarify. You must jump and clarify every issue, because the impression, I'll be honest, even out there is created, is that since you published this charter and ask for comments, there have been concerns that were raised, particularly by the chamber, and you quickly ran to the boardroom and engaged with them, seeking consensus. So I think it's important that that clarity is given, that this is not on that list. But what I'm saying, honorable members, on the issue of consultation, we must agree that this process, there's a lot of progress made. I think you are a little bit far in terms of what has to be done. I'm tempted also to say, please be patient with us as we continue to perform our duties. We might have in the final analysis when almost the final shape, but I think it's almost 90% work that has been done, which then begins to give us a little bit of clarity on where we are going. So I think that one is something that we must welcome. But one issue that we have not, and I'm not going to give you now the chance again, is that probably when we deal with the final product, we may have to get the form of your mining transformation and what we call development agents. Look, I'm a skeptic, I must say. I'm a skeptic. You see, sometimes you get this thing that there is an institution or an entity that must generate revenue or income. And instead of doing so, it becomes a cost itself.
You see, this creation of structures, this place, this one, this agent, at the end of the day, there are people who must sit there, deal and process with these things, and only to find out what is supposed to be generated and benefiting. It's also now being short cut by the fact that it has to also address the cost that goes with the existence of the institution. So I'm just saying that's why for me, not that I'm saying there's something wrong, but it's important to understand what is it that we are doing, because in one way or the other, I think to some degree, maybe for another day, I wouldn't dismiss this issue completely. For maybe for another day, when we deal with the issues of this nature, it's important to get an overarching overview in terms of the comparison exercise that is being done. You talked about the Australian environment, Canadian, some of us will tell about the Chinese. Honorable Mukwena gives an example about the Zimbabwean situation. I'm saying it may not necessarily be, in my view, on the mining charter. Remember, we still have got that outstanding work that we had not finalized again, even ourselves as a committee, around the issue of the job loss, maybe because of this boom now. We never saw that, we're no longer seeing that thing as a matter of agents. So I'm just saying maybe as a part of beefing up in future when we deal with this thing, it's a matter that must be taken into consideration. Honorable members, I think having done so, can we go to the minutes? I would have requested something in the minutes if I'm allowed. Can you, I wanted to suggest one thing, just get clarity from the department on the, I know, that's why I said we put it here. One of the reasons I was saying these minutes, we need to put them. For an example, I'll be honest, I said to Mtunjin, one of the things, it's not the minutes are written wrongly, except if members say we must go and with them as they are. Just on the first paragraph, which I said we needed to correct, it's written correctly. For instance, it's just issues of language per se. You see, when you say, it says the chairperson seeks indulgence on whether to first deal with the letter or to defer. Now, when you use the word defer, first indulgence could mean something else. But when you use the word defer, defer could mean that you are taking a matter where it was. You are putting it somewhere else. But if it will say, that's why I'm making just simple examples to say. But again, for someone who would come to the minutes in the near future, I'm not saying there's something wrong. It says, on whether the first, then it says for discussion towards the, it says the latter, then it says the committee deliberated. You see, deliberated on the latter and resolved. Now the problem for someone wouldn't know what is it that was deliberated on, it's not capturing. So we thought we were going to just factor in, just to give a little bit without details, give a little bit of flesh, what were the issues so that the resolution is able to reflect what could have been the sub-issues. I'm saying that there are quite a number of the issues. But the issue I was then saying is that in as much as we can deal with that, because it will still be a matter that will arise, we get the department to clarify on the resolution specifically with regard to the written response by the minister on the letter. If honorable members allow me, we can deal with that one. And then we take the minutes. You see, now deference will mean this, that we defer the minutes then to the next meeting. And then I will work with the acting secretary, who will then bring them as a better format. This thing of agreed doesn't work here. It means a mover and a second. I won't say which institution that says agreed. No. Honorable Mandela.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to move, Honorable Chair, as per your proposal, that you sit with the acting secretary to ensure that you attend to the matters that you have highlighted in terms of the letter which was authored by Honorable Lorimer. Thank you.
Any seconder?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I second the proposal.
Okay. Can we get clarity, Babu?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. The Minister is currently abroad on official business, and hence the apology was sent. And I mean, since the Minister's appointment, he had ensured that he comes to the PPC and deal with the issues that are presented before the department. And so he has requested that, since these questions have been posed, obviously, for his response, that he be given an opportunity to respond to those issues personally, of which he will do, and also present the formal response to the portfolio committee. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Lorden?
When?
Honorable Mendel?
Thank you, Chair.
I'm a mediator. I was told I'm mediating.
You must mediate. It's a good question posed by Honorable Lorimer, although we need to be reminded, Honorable Chair, that the Minister does come and account to the committee. So perhaps when he's back, I think the program will allow that he comes to the committee. And I think we can probably put this on the agenda for next week. I wanted to suggest. Thank you.
Honorable Matsala.
Yes, Chair, I second the proposals made by Honorable Malima with the processes that we have to follow next week. Thank you so much.
Just one comment. It should be a simple process. If there's nothing to discuss, this could have been done by the Minister last week when he was here very quickly. He could have disposed of it like this. Said this, and I'll send paperwork to follow. But he hasn't. So I'm suspicious of all this. And I think it could be have been put to bed, but it hasn't been, so I have to ask why. So I'm just leaving it there.
Look, I don't have a problem with suspicion, but if I was suspicious, I wouldn't say it was. I did see the response of the Minister on the responding on the matter in publicly. But I think the point that we were raising last week was that if there's something that is put into writing to the committee, that's why I sought that clarity on the 60 whatever list. If there is something that is put on the committee in writing, we then say we need a response in writing for safekeeping purposes. I would have thought what we should do is that Mr. Mses, let's just say to the Minister, the matter is urgent, will request that in soon as he's back, he must be able to come and present to the committee his response. And then preferable, that's what we say, preferable in our next meeting. No. I deal with committee decisions. Okay. On that note, let me thank everyone for being part of this committee. Next week, we're dealing with the principle of the polluter pays. Yes. So we are going to be dealing with those issues. Mtonjeni. No, we are going to land. Don't worry. You're going to learn. It's just one of those things. My main worry was that Honorable Mandela today was worried that when he looks at this side of the department, it's Africans only. Then when I looked on this side of the table, I find that it's men only. So it's a coincidence. Thank you very much. Hope we'll see others next week.